Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Were you out and about at the weekend at all? Or did you just stay home?
I never am out and about. I go out every weekend. I mean, I don't like going out. And then when I do, it's usually to one restaurant and that's it.
Hello, I'm Minnie Driver. I've always loved Proust's questionnaire. It was originally a 19th century parlor game where players would ask each other 35 questions aimed at revealing the other player's true nature. In asking different people the same set of questions, you can make observations about which truths appear to be universal. And it made me wonder, what if these questions were just the jumping off point? What greater depths would be revealed if I asked these questions as conversation starters? So I adapted Proust's questionnaire, and I wrote my own 7 questions that I personally think are pertinent to a person's story. They are, when and where were you happiest? What is the quality you like least about yourself? What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you? What question would you most like answered? What person, place, or experience has shaped you the most? What would be your last meal? And can you tell me something in your life that's grown out of a personal disaster? And I've gathered a group of really remarkable people, ones that I am honored and humbled to have had the chance to engage with. You may not hear their answers to all 7 of these questions. We've whittled it down to which questions felt closest to their experience or the most surprising or created the most fertile ground to connect. My guest today is the actor Courtney Cox. Courtney's been such a huge part of all of our cultural consciousness since 1994 when she was cast in Friends, perhaps the most successful sitcom of all time. It's really interesting to speak with a person who everybody has this deep feeling of already knowing because of the beloved character they played. Carving out a space for who you are as a person beyond the characters you play as an actor is a challenge, particularly when your fame is stratospheric. Courtney is a curious, deep-feeling human who is unafraid to explore the meaning and mysteries of life. It was great to have such a candid conversation with her here on the show. What quality do you like least about yourself?
Oh, wow. The thing I like least about myself would be any feelings of jealousy. Whether you can feel replaced or whether it's, I think just jealousy is such a horrible emotion to have. And I have that sometimes. I get jealous or afraid, whether it's because I'm getting older and I'm not, I can't stay in the game, or it could be about anything, but anytime I feel jealous, I can't stand it. I will talk to my therapist and go, I just hate this feeling.
It's so interesting because when we think about jealousy, when I'm thinking about it, it's usually to do with a lover. That's how I perceive it. But it's really interesting, that idea of, if you follow it all the way through and it's like, no, it can come in many forms. That feeling of being replaced, that is such a pertinent one, because that goes to the fundament of who of who I am or of who you are, the idea that there is someone who could take our place when categorically there isn't.
I know. When you step back, of course, you're not replaceable, but it's that feeling that can come up for me, whether it's through friendships or, like you said, relationships or in work.
I'm fascinated by that because it's like, I know that there must be these aspects of you. It's like, you're glad that you're grown up because you're Coco's mama and you get to be that. But there's also that profound memory, specifically as an actor, of when we were very young and like at the sort of the zenith and that exalted feeling. I feel that. It's like, how does one negotiate and manage that feeling of being older and there being these young people who are who we were, as it were. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's not easy.
No, not at all.
I remember when Olivia Newton-John, I read this a long time ago, and I couldn't find it when she passed away. And I wanted to, because I remember it being so important to me. But she had said this comment that when she was in Greece and she was wearing those black tight pants and smoking that cigarette and doing that dance, she felt terrible about herself. She didn't like the way she looked. She felt fat. She wasn't comfortable. This is what I read. And I could have been, you know, I'm making some of it up because I just remember the feeling of going, whoa, how could you not think you were perfect back then? And she didn't. And then we look back in life and go, wait a minute, we should have been so pleased with certain aspects of our life. Anyway, that's not part of my jealousy answer.
No, but I think that's part of it's the irony of the wonder of getting older is I find now that my presence of mind or presence of self or presence of everything around me is so acute. And it's almost like I was fast asleep when I was there in those moments of whether it's a physical peak of strength and agility or how it was that I wanted my body to look, it was like I was fast asleep. And I can't believe the disparity of this wisdom that comes. It's such a cliche, but the wisdom that comes as we get older, which is not visited upon us, or if we're very lucky, it is when we're younger. And that it is that I wish I could take this and go back and tell that person, be present and be aware and be in love with the way that you are right now, because it's full of so much good stuff. It's wild.
Oh God. Yes. I think that we always, whether it's, oh, when you have a child, you know, you're going to really miss these toddler days, you know, just stay in the moment, enjoy them being a little baby. And I was just like, oh, when is this phase going to be over? This is brutal. But I guess when you don't get the chance to have more kids or now they're growing up, it's just like, oh God, I wish I held on to that a little longer. But I just think it's kind of the way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it really is. I did a birthday video on Instagram and I was remembering this thing Carrie Fisher said when I was 25 and I was at this birthday party that I didn't know a single person there. I'd literally just arrived in town. I was shooting a movie and they'd thrown this Hollywood party for me as I turned 25. And I was kind of sitting by the fire and she came and sat down and she was like, why are you looking so miserable? And I was like, I don't know, I'm 25. It feels like a milestone and I'm not with anyone I really know. And she was like, let me tell you, this is the youngest you're ever going to be again. I know it's the oldest you've ever been. And I think about that all the time. I think about it on my birthday. I also think about it when I get, because I get so exactly as I know you must about your child, because we both have one kid. I'm like, God, I wish I'd paid more attention, or I wish I hadn't wished that phase was over. Like I go, okay, well, Henry's 14. God, I wish he was little again. And we were having that conversation. I let that trigger me into going, well, I'm going to have that conversation with him now, because I know when I'm older, him being 14 is still going to be like a baby. Mm. And those conversations are, I mean, obviously it's very different to when they were little. I was just thinking, I remember being at a thing when you had Coco. I don't know, she must have been like 8 or 9 and I had a leather jacket on. We said hi and you went to leave and then she came back and she went, I like your leather jacket. That was a good choice.
Oh God.
It was so, and then she gave me a thumbs up and I was just like, that kid's going places. I like She's like a firecracker. I mean, I just remember her when she was little. Like, I don't know her as a young woman now, but like, you got to be a firecracker in this world. You have to be. You have to be strong and wily and ready for anything. And I think particularly being a woman and growing up in this world, I think it's a good thing. I really do.
It was, I think, that time of her life, she was so, I mean, she is really funny, but there was no insecurity about her.
Do you ever find that when you're looking at your daughter in the way that I look at my son and go, my God, they are just not imbued with the same insecurity that I have. Like I categorically know I did not pass on my pathological insecurity about, well, whatever that is to them. Do you ever feel that with Coco, or does it make you feel proud or happy?
Not at all. I feel like I look at somebody and I've passed all of that stuff on to, if anything. I mean, I think having a girl is probably different, but I wish so bad that I could have realized in the moment a way to protect Coco from things that I didn't, because of my own issues, whether it was codependency or seeing her in relationships with people that I knew this was not good. But I didn't want to step in, even though I knew something wasn't right, because she would get so mad at me. She wanted me to, you know, let me deal with it, Mom. You don't understand. And I did understand. And I should have trusted myself and I should have stepped in. So with certain things about myself, she saw them. I'm not saying I made her who she is, but you do see things in other people, and whether it's just always, you know, taking care of people and being the nicest person. And I mean, that's one of the things with age. I've learned to say no. I've learned to have boundaries. But I mean, earlier on when she was a kid, or not even that many years ago, I wish I'd been a firmer parent.
Wow. I mean, yeah, God, that's so interesting. I feel like I wrote down a list of things that I didn't want to do that my parents did with me. I really tried. I mean, you can't do it all the time. I don't know what Henry's going to be in therapy over to do with me, but I'm sure he'll tell me.
But you know what? He might be the kid that has the coolest mom, and he will look for his partner to be whatever it is that reminds him. And it's going to be hard to live up to. But I have a feeling you're an incredible, kind, loving, patient mom.
Well, that's really nice of you to say, but I'm definitely not that all of the time.
Thank God Coco isn't into really high-end clothes or designer anything. She doesn't care about labels. And thank God that she shops for her clothes on Amazon, because she could be this other kid that I want to have Gucci. And you'd have to spend your whole life saying no, but she'll say, Mom, I have bought like 5 pairs of Mary Janes on Amazon and they just keep breaking. I would it be okay if I got just one really nice pair? I'm like, oh shit, yeah. And she'll say, yeah, it's from Steve Madden. And I'm like, sure, Coco, go ahead. I'm so lucky.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
What question would you most like answered?
I would like to know the answer to where did we come from? Because if I knew where we came from, I'd know where we're going.
Do you know what? I think that as well. Henry said the other day, he's like, why do you think that where you were before is where you're going to go after you die? And I was like, I don't know. I just do.
Well, it's also, at least it's a possibility. I mean.
Yeah, I think it's a solid theory. Based on absolutely nothing. But yes, I'm completely with you. So you're talking about a consciousness that would then enter the bundle of cells that are created by human beings. Like, do you believe that there is somewhere a before consciousness or a before place that consciousness swirls around?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've watched people close to me die. And I saw my dad when he was within moments of dying, and I saw him looking up and smiling, and then he would frown, and then he'd be confused, and then repeat it all over again. And I was like, Dad, are you talking to angels? And he said, yes, baby. And then I said, are you safe? His nurse was next to me, and she goes, did you hear him? He said, yes. I go, I didn't hear that. And then I was like, oh, this is the part where I'm supposed to have faith that it's going to be okay. You don't get to have the answers. And I was like, I didn't hear him. I tried to ask again. I got nothing. But I don't know what happens out there. I don't know where we go, why we do it. Are we coming back? Are we not? I don't know. But if I knew where we came from, it feels a little, it would give me a little safety or some insight.
Do you think it would be easier to get the answer to where we came from, as opposed to where we're going?
Well, I don't want to know where we're going really, because what am I going to do every day? Worry that what if it's not a place I want to go?
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or what if this is it? Then I got to know every day that, oh my God. Well, I guess if you think this is it, you can live in the moment and really enjoy every single thing. But I don't want to have fear about it. But if I knew where we came from, then there's possibility still. What it would be interesting if you did know, like, oh yeah, you were an insect last time or something. It would be, I always seemed to, because I'm really happy in this life. I just want to know, was it worse before? Was it better? I think I know there's certain lessons that we will continue to have to learn until we get them.
Do you mean that singularly or do you mean that as people?
Well, actually as people, but I meant that singularly when I said it.
You know what's really interesting, what you do, which I'm saying this because I got busted for this when I was writing my book. You do this thing where you put things in the second person, and I do it too. So in talking about a relationship, you know, when you're angry with someone or when you love someone or when they do such and such. And I was writing like that, and my editor went, do you realize that whenever you're writing something really emotional, you go into the second person, you write, you know, when you leave school and there's nobody there to pick you up and you fall over and you have to pick yourself up and walk home and there's no one to open the door. And I was like, I don't do that. Got really defensive. And then I went back and I looked, and anytime there was something, it was like to create a space between me and this thing happening. It feels so tender to me now when we as people, when you do it and when I do it, or when I hear someone else do it, it immediately makes me know, makes me want to hug them. It's so hard to be a human and to be in our stuff and to own it, because there is so much we don't know and so much we just have to trust and so much we have to embrace. And then having children and watching them go through all of that, not knowing, I think that is such a genuinely sweet, dear, tender part of you, Courtney. Mm-hmm. It really is. Just in observing.
But yeah, I will be taking note of that and watching myself do it. It's really funny.
It sort of blew my mind when she told me that. What relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you?
I mean, I have certain people that I know and love that have relationships that I look up to. But I would say a relationship that has complete acceptance. When you love somebody through their emotional challenges and their frailty and their weaknesses and their triggers and just their messiness, their unsolved selves, and you love them through all of that, or you accept all of that, that's to me the definition of real love.
Is acceptance.
Acceptance.
Do you feel that's, like, when you feel about that, is that the way in which you are accepted or the way in which you feel yourself accepting the other person?
Well, to feel someone accept me for all of my foibles and my, you know, whatever they are, that feels like true, absolute true love. I mean, it's hard. I don't accept everything about somebody, but when I meet people and they, you know, they say, oh, you know, I hated this before I met this person. Then it's like, you know what? I love that person. And so what are you going to do?
When did you first feel that? Like, did you have that modeled for you as a kid, or did you come to it when you were in a relationship? Like, how did you come upon that realization?
No, I didn't have that at all when I was a kid. Not at all. My mom, she was a beautiful woman that had no real drive. She was so sweet and she was so non-judgmental to everyone except for herself and maybe her kids. Mm. But I used to say to my mom, did you ever go long? Did anybody ever throw a football and say, run? And then someone throws it and you caught it in the middle of the air. And she's like, no. She was a Southern sweet lady. So that's why I actually got this tattoo that says go long, because I wanted my mom to like go. But my mom didn't have a lot of drive. And my dad would love sports and he loved women. He was very much of a flirt. But no, they had nothing in common. They didn't have any acceptance for each other.
So your tattoo says go long. When you look at that, what does that mean for you?
Take chances, enjoy, be silly. Don't let fear stop you. You know, if you're embarrassed to fail, it's okay.
Do it anyway.
Yeah. It means so many different things. Yeah.
I love that. I think that's such a fantastic thing to be able to look down and look at and remind yourself of.
I mean, I'm in a relationship now where I feel like we are growing to accept each other. It's taken a long time. I think it's sometimes you have to grow into that.
What is it that you think makes you stay, like, to wait for the acceptance? Like, if that's the thing that you've set your course for, if that's the thing you're running towards, and there's a certain amount of faith in that, of going, okay, well, this is what I'm heading towards. What is it that keeps you going, I'm waiting for this to show up, or I believe that this is going to show up? What are some of the other tenets that kind of keep you strong in while you're waiting for acceptance?
Well, when you first meet someone, you accept everything. And then as time goes, you don't accept anything. Or you accept everything and goes, oh, wait a minute, I don't really like that. And then as I get further into a relationship and I like the person, then I realize some of the things that I couldn't accept in the middle part were things that I probably needed to control. I remember wanting to control certain things, whether it's, I don't like you smoking cigarettes. I would make it personal. Cigarettes are really hard to not do when you are addicted. But for some reason, if you couldn't quit for somebody, then it was like, how about that's their issue? That's okay. I accept. I remember just feeling that I think that a lot of it has to do with feeling, I guess, again, like the other question, important. So what keeps you in there? Just liking the person, I think.
I mean, that's really interesting because perhaps it's about the acceptance of self. That's how one accepts things in another person, whatever it is, intolerance or impatience, all of those things, because you really like a person. I think liking someone is a huge bridge.
I think that's really true. It's really about self-acceptance, because if you can accept the part of you that doesn't have to be rigid, you don't have to hold on to things. You can accept or ask yourself questions.
Well, I don't know. The things that make me, in the beginning, what is it Chris Rock said? When you first start dating me, you're not dating me, you're dating my representative. Like that's that. I've always loved that. You accept everything in the beginning and then all that shit starts to bug you. But it's funny now, like in my relationship, the stuff that bugged me, now it makes me laugh because I see it as part of him, this person that has all these things that are amazing, not just the highlights that I loved before and just looked at that, but the really annoying stuff. It sort of makes me chuckle because I feel like it's made me a more tolerant person. And I know that's the same with him. The stuff that he puts up with, just as you said, the stuff that they put up with us, that's part of what love is. Like love is accepting one's intolerance in part and carrying on anyway.
Yeah.
It's so funny, this idea of romantic love, that we are soul, that this person encapsulates all of these things. But it's not. Love is actually tolerating their shit and loving them anyway.
And understanding them more, because I don't know if it's age or whether it's duration, but now I can really see, oh, this is what's happening. I see where the wounds come from, and myself and in others. I see that in all of my relationships. It's so much easier to be tolerant and patient when you know that any kind of act out or any kind of trigger that comes up, it has such a root that is more important than what's happening in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can forgive anybody for any, like any friend, anything. I don't hold any grudges because you know that's coming from a deeper wound. Although I did have a dream about Lisa Kudrow last night and she really hurt my feelings. And I didn't like think about her, why she might do that. She wouldn't do something with me. And Lisa is like one of the greatest people on the planet. And she would do anything for me, but not last night. She didn't. So I got to call her and find out about that.
God, I wish I knew what dreams meant. You've taken the most reliable person and then you spun her into your dream to be the person that lets you down. It's like, okay, I found the most reliable person to screw me over. Like, what is that?
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stage's podcast. Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with the season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stage's podcast.
Subscribe to Stage's podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.
In your life, can you tell me about something that has grown out of a personal disaster?
I won't use the second person. I will say when Johnny and I broke up.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
This is Johnny, who you are still in.
I'm still with.
Your relationship with, you're still together, but there was a moment where you broke up. Okay.
Yeah. After about 2 or 3 years, we've been together for like.
Long time.
Yeah. So 3 years in, we broke up. And it was really intense. We broke up in therapy. I didn't know it was coming, whether I should have or not. It was just like, we went to this therapist to talk about our boundaries, what we could and couldn't accept about each other. There's that acceptance.
Uh-huh.
Instead, he just broke up within the first minute. And I was like, what? And we were engaged. And I was so shocked. I was in so much pain. I also don't like surprises. And he's an incredible human being. So he wasn't trying to surprise me. He was in that much pain in the relationship. There was that much that needed to be dealt with that he had to protect himself around his heart. So as opposed to like going, fuck him. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on this thing, but.
You can curse up a storm.
Okay. As opposed to going, fuck him, you know, getting in this mode of anger, I went in and I did the most work on myself by far. I learned how to reclaim my voice, boundaries. What were my motives in life? Like, what was my part in this? And I'm so thankful for that breakup because, A, when we got back together, it was a different relationship, but also because it really taught me how I operated in the world. What were the things from my childhood that I needed, like whether it was to be adored by men or things that I didn't know how to let go to be in a relationship, to not take things personally. My boundaries, I just went into myself and I had a great therapist. I went to the same one. I kept seeing him, the one that we met on the breakup day. And it was brutal to go to his office after that for a while, but then it was great. And I'm really thankful. A, nothing will ever hurt me that bad again. And then B, most of all, most importantly, I completely changed.
Gosh, that's so interesting. I feel like all of us will mostly do anything we can to not feel pain. I think people are so frightened of emotional pain. But the idea of when it happens, there's so much strength in realizing that it doesn't kill you and that what one can foster in oneself because of that pain is so much better and so much more amazing. There is such incredible freedom in taking the hit and then going, what is my part in the pain of all of this? And coming out the other side. Like, because I imagine if you come out of the other side of that with Johnny or without Johnny, it would sort of been a completely different version of yourself.
It takes a lot of bravery to end something that has so much passion or end anything, any kind of relationship. It's so much easier just to stay and ride things out and make excuses. And, you know, fear of pain is just too much to handle. But once you are bold enough to make decisions and go through the pain, you can't go around it. So you just go through it. And then when you do, everything's easier. That's what I always try to tell Coco, this issue, this is a roadblock. You can't go around it. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it, deal with it. And this is another thing I learned during that time. And I'm still working on it every day. Am I doing this out of fear or connection? And I have to ask myself, like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I haven't heard from that person. I wonder if they still like me, or I wonder if they care. And then I think, wait a minute, do I actually care if they care? Do I really want to? Am I connecting with them, or now just seeing if they care?
I'm writing things down that you're saying.
It gives you a lot of clarity. What is your motive? What are you doing things for? And I'm thankful that Johnny was so bold and brave, because it was life-changing for me, and I'm sure for him.
You do make the most delicious food. So what would be your last meal?
Is my stomach like endless?
It's limitless. This is like your everything that you love.
Okay. I would start with a Giorgio salad, the one on West Channel.
Oh.
I love their dressing, whatever the red wine vinegar or whatever it is. I've tried, but I cannot make it as good. It's got arugula and endives. And anyway, that's what I'd start with. And then I would have like a pasta course, which would be maybe a pesto and maybe a tomato sauce with some fresh mozzarella. And then I'd have a twice baked potato stuffed with like sour cream and cheese and butter. And I'd have a steak, but cooked the way this guy made it on my Instagram recently. So good. It was better than I can do.
Wait, you didn't even eat it? You just looked at it on Instagram and that's how you want your steak?
No. I saw him on Instagram.
And then you got him to come.
I wrote to him.
No way. And he came and cooked it. Stop it.
Oh, Instagram is like a dating or friend website.
Oh my God, Courtney, that's the most amazing thing. So you saw a guy make a steak and then you DM'd him and he was like, sure, I'll come. And then he came and actually recreated that steak in your house and you ate it.
This looks so good. So I asked, could he please come over and teach me something? He used to work for a Michelin star restaurant, and I'm not really into that kind of food because I want more. I like bulk.
Yes, I like bulk too. I agree.
And I don't need it to be so fancy. I need like, how do I make this?
Yes.
So yeah, he came over and he taught me how to make that steak. We made that. And then he came over again and made this Korean Southern fried chicken with coleslaw over waffles.
Oh my God.
And it was incredible, but I will say it took like 7 hours. He made the pastry. I said, like, dude, why don't you just get some Pillsbury dough crescent roll? No one's going to care once you put it in the waffle maker, just the shape there. And he had like the layer of pastry and then the big thing of butter and then more pastries. And I was like, oh my God, it was the longest meal in the whole world.
That's making puff pastry. It is gnarly making puff pastry from scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a croissant that you put into a
that you then put in a waffle on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was great.
That's a croissant waffle.
That's called a croffle.
A croissant. Any which way.
Yeah.
Now I want that. And then you put fried chicken on top.
That was twice fried. And then after it was so crunchy, then he put it with this Korean kind of oyster sauce. It was salty, sweet, spicy.
Salt, fat, acid, sugar. Oh my God, I'm so hungry now. I just can't thank you enough. That's such a wonderful conversation. I've written so many things down just to go and remember. And waffles made out of puff pastry is maybe my best takeaway.
Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Minnie Driver. Executive produced by me and Aaron Kaufman, with production support from Jennifer Bassett, Zoe Denkler, and Ali Perry. The theme music is also by me, and additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Addison O'Day, Henry Driver, Lisa Castella, Anique Oppenheim, Anique Muller, and Annette Wolfe at WKPR, Will Pearson, Nikki Etor, Morgan Lavoie, and Mangesh Hatikador.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz, this time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks. And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes.
Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.